Hey, what's going on, everybody? I'm Adam.
And I'm Gary.
And we're two dudes.
Counting mail-in ballots.
Oh, no. You. Oh, man. Hello, everybody. How are you doing tonight? Welcome to Two Dudes Picking. That is Two Dudes Picking, not Two Dudes Counting Mail-In Ballots. And our special guest tonight is Josh Farnell, Mr. Harry Tornado. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I am better than I deserve. A little stressed out due to the election. I'm sure we all are, no matter what side you're on. But I'm just ready for it to be over, man. It's usually not such a long, drawn-out process. It's just
that's
weird.
That's the truth.
Usually you stay up till 2 or 3 in the morning and you can go to bed knowing who won, but.
Exactly. Yeah. And I stayed up until about 11:30 and realized we're not going to learn this tonight. So I just went to bed.
This reminds me of 2000, the 2000 election when Florida was the big thing in question. And everybody thought, you know, it was over before you went to bed. And then all of a sudden it wasn't over. And, you know, what, a month later, I think it was, we figure out who's going to be the president. So it's kind of reminds me of that a lot. But, yeah, so, politics aside.
You brought it up, Gary. You brought it up.
I did not bring it up. So.
All right. Oh, we got the guests already showing up. But I do appreciate you coming out here and joining us tonight, everybody. And we are a bit of a small channel, but I'm sure a lot of you already know Josh. But in case you do not, Josh, I'm going to give you an opportunity to just introduce yourself quickly. And what do you want the guests and the listeners to know about Harry Tornado?
Sure. So, yeah, my name is Josh. I go by Harry Tornado on YouTube and Instagram. And I've been making reselling YouTube videos for a while, a year and a half, something like that. Been reselling for about that same amount of time. And just trying to figure it out a little bit as I go. Make videos 2 to 3 times a week. And been full time for just over a year now, since August. August was a year. So 14 months or so. Again, still trying to figure it out. YouTube is kind of my main thing right now. And then reselling is, I don't want to say like on the back burner, but reselling is like what my YouTube channel is about. But
right.
In terms of income and my attention lately has been on YouTube. I talked about it in my live stream on my channel today. I'm not like, I would consider myself a pretty mediocre reseller right now. I think I had like $500 in sales last week. But I got to, going into Q4, definitely got to get some more listings up and focus on eBay a little bit more than I have been.
Excellent. And you're doing really good. I enjoy watching your videos personally.
Thanks.
Hey, Gary, what's your background? How long have you been reselling? What do you want the chatters to know?
Just, you know, for the better part of about a decade, I suppose. You know, when I first got to selling more along what we do now, you know, where I was actually actively going and picking items from thrift stores, from flea markets, from yard sales and things like that. It's probably a better part of a decade. I had eBay prior to that, but it was mostly about just selling things that was around the house. Or, you know, if I was working on my car and I took a part off, I would go ahead and stick it on eBay, make a little bit of money back on it to where I could pay for the new part that I bought. So that's kind of my background. How about you, Adam?
Part-time reseller, about 7 years in, maybe not quite 7 years. And Gary got me started on it back then. He took me under his wing and taught me everything he knew, right?
Here maybe we are tonight because of that one conversation.
I always wonder, did you teach me everything or just what you wanted me to know? We'll never find out,
to be
right?
Seen. Yeah. Padawan will become the Jedi one day. Yeah.
Have a lot of people going on in the chat tonight, and I want to say thank y'all for everybody coming out. We got Joey, and we got Casey, and we got Bearded Thrift Machine and Bearded Thrift Machine's lady, Southern Pearl Thrift. Thanks, everybody, for joining us tonight. We got a really good conversation coming up with Josh Harry Tornado. Josh, to begin with, I sent you a couple of questions that we're going to get to in just a minute. But you know what? I want to ask you a couple of off-the-wall questions that you are not prepared for. We call this our lightning round. How do you feel about that?
I am excited.
Do you want to get started?
I'm ready. Ready for
it. All right. The lightning round to get to know Josh a little bit better. If I gave you a free plane ticket to anywhere in the world, where would you go?
Probably Thailand. Probably Thailand. Okay. I feel like it's interesting. I don't know. I feel like it's interesting. I've heard it's a very cheap place to visit. It's not very expensive. Also, I just watched a movie today called Impossible. It's the story of a family of survivors from the 2004 tsunami that hit there. Yep. And I don't think most people realize how devastating that was. Not to be a Debbie Downer, but there were over 230,000 people that died from that tsunami, which in terms of people and them dying, that's significant. And
that
I was
huge.
2014, Chris, I had just turned 14 at that time. So I was just like, and I was playing with my, we were all playing with Christmas gifts over here. If you celebrate Christmas and I remember hearing about it. I'm like, oh, that sucks. But you don't really process it in your head. So Thailand's just on my mind today since that movie. I'd love to go there.
There you go. It's pretty tropical too, isn't it?
Yeah.
The food is fantastic too. I love Thai food. So I would love to try in Thailand personally. So I had a buddy that went there and he says, if you've tried Thai food here and then you go there to try it, you haven't tried Thai food.
Mm-hmm. So it's probably the same thing with any kind of cuisine.
I would
imagine. I know that. Yeah. I love the Chinese food we got here in this one place in Columbus, but I'll be honest with you. I bet it ain't nothing like what you would get over in China. So second question, other than your wife, who would you take with you?
Man, that's a good question. Probably my friend Paul. He's a real fun guy to just have in certain situations. My friend at church, Paul, it's hard to explain. He's just a very interesting person to have around. So I'd like to see him in Thailand with us.
Is he one of those friends that's with you through thick and thin, like not bailing you out of jail, but sitting right beside you in jail?
Paul's a yes man. Like Paul's on board for anything. So he's just really fun to hang out with.
Yeah. It sounds like an interesting character.
Yeah.
All right. iPhone or Android?
Android.
All right. Still winning on that category.
Yep.
All right. How do you like your eggs cooked?
You know, I'm not a big egg guy. My wife makes eggs every single morning and sometimes I can eat them like scrambled. If I eat eggs, they have to be scrambled. Okay. I got to be in the mood for eggs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like ketchup on my eggs. Am I weird?
That's pretty weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a go on YouTube and look up Gordon Ramsay's scrambled eggs. His recipe, it will change your life. I promise you, it will change your life.
I remember him like telling, there was some show, I think it was him. He was like teaching people how to make it, and his are like really creamy. He like puts my eggs have to be like cooked all the way. There's not going to be any creamy. I don't understand how people think creaminess on scrambled eggs means good. That
the
just
texture thing, isn't it?
Egg. Yeah. Yeah. No.
My wife will dip her toast in the runniness of the yolk, and I just can't do that.
I do not like fried eggs, like hamburgers with fried eggs on it, where the yolk's all like, that's disgusting, man. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
All right. Next question. What do you do to relax on the weekend?
Oh, relax. I don't know.
Something you don't get very much of, I guess.
I mean, I get as much as I want, you know, being a full-time reseller YouTuber, like I never have to, there's never that, like, I guess a lot of need for relaxation because you're already doing what you want to do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I play
Mario golf.
Not really sports. I really like softball and frisbee, but I'm too out of shape to play frisbee competitive. Like all the guys that still play frisbee are like in college and like 100 pounds lighter than me. So I can't really
run like a deer. Yeah.
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 And I really like playing
softball. I'll throw you the frisbee. You go after it.
Yeah. That's what I like. I like throwing frisbee. I'll throw a frisbee with anybody for all day long, but they play like ultimate frisbee. And if you're not athletic, you just run back and forth for 3 hours and you never get the frisbee because they never throw it to you. I don't know, but I like playing softball, but earlier this year, our spring season was canceled and then the fall season was canceled and then nobody's talked about it ever since. So
yeah, I hear you on that one. Everything was canceled back in April. My kids, mm-hmm. soccer, everything was canceled. All right. Last lightning round question. What is your dream car?
Toyota 4Runner, honestly, is the car.
Your dream car? Nice. I know you just got it, but that's your dream car?
I'm not one for the fancy life. Like, I guess it'd be nice to have a Tesla one day, but even Teslas aren't like that expensive. You know, you can get a Tesla for like 40 grand.
Yeah.
And in terms of like dream cars, like these people that want Lamborghinis and Rolls Royce, I would never drive anything like that. Now, Mr. Beast made a video of him like picking up people in an Uber and then giving them a car, giving them the car he picked them up in. And the last one was a Lamborghini. And I was like, I wouldn't even want that. That's like a $200,000 car. Like, what do you need with that?
Yeah, the maintenance on them is like unreal as well. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, it would bankrupt you. You know, if you can't afford two, you can't afford one is the saying when it comes to stuff like that.
Yeah. It's a show car. You can't get the speed that you need to get on the streets around here. I mean, I think you pretty much got to be in Germany or something. Well, I can't remember. What's the name of that street where there's no speed limits?
Autobahn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's where you would want to drive a car like that, right?
Yeah. I think I would polish it up, leave it in the garage, and just sit out there while watching football and drink beer and just look at it. You know, it's like a piece of art.
Sit in it. Yeah, sit in the driver's seat. Look through the windshield at your TV.
That's right. This costs more money.
You can hook up your video games and like sit in the car and play you know, Need for Speed or whatever.
Yeah, Fast and Furious style, you know.
But yeah, my dream car, 4Runner, man, they're just... It's nice. I mean, maybe one day I would like to, because I just have the SR5 now. I'd like to get maybe the TRD Pro, which is, I mean, those can get up to like 70 or 80,000, you know, depending on the package you get. But it's nice. It's a good looking car. It's functional. It's reliable. Anything I could ever need.
Are you an off road guy, Josh? Is that why you have you know, a 4Runner? No, not at all. Okay.
No, I do want to do. They have like these tents you can put on the roof, so you go camping. You just pull up into a spot and like unfold it, then you sleep on top of the car.
That's right.
I wanted one, but I didn't. They're like $1,200, like the cheapest one I found. Yep. So maybe in the spring when we actually have time to go camping and it's not freezing cold.
There's something sounds about good. Not sleeping on the ground. I'll say that. So when you put one of those on there, you know, bugs, rain, the fact it's cold, you know, takes that completely out of the equation for the most part.
Yep.
So
absolutely. And you know what? I can understand the 4Runner concept as being your dream car, because for the longest time, my dream car was a certain model of the Chevy Tahoe because of the bells and the whistles and the size and how it drove. But
yeah.
That was some time ago. Mine now is just the concept of a big truck. That's what I want.
You want a truck? Tesla truck? Cybertruck?
No. I want a truck that'll get over stuff, not get stuck on stuff.
Yeah, when it runs out of battery. Yes.
It runs out of battery.
I think GMC just put out an electric truck, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty sure. And I'm pretty sure it's very expensive, like $100,000.
Oh, yeah. I can buy a lot of gasoline for $100,000.
Yeah. You know?
A lot.
Yeah. So. Yeah, our gas prices here and it like the middle of South Carolina are down to like 158 or something crazy.
Oh, wow.
It's so funny. I'll do like anytime I do a video about how much money I made thrifting, there's always that person that comments like, "What about your gas?" Like,
It's
$1.50 a gallon, man. Like,
yeah.
I probably spent $40 in gas the whole month.
Like, well, okay. I'm sure you keep up with that anyway since you do your own business. Write-off. Yeah,
Like when I made my income video for July, which at that point was my best month ever. Even after taxes, I made almost $10,000, and I still had comments on that. Like, what about your gas? I'm like, okay, so I drove about 300 miles. That's about one tank of gas per the month for business miles,
right?
And at that point, gas was like $1.40 per gallon. I'm like, so by the time I'd factor in the price of gas and the 57.5 cent a mile write off, I actually made like $160 in gas. If you want to get technical about it.
Yeah. And I mean, and did you buy a bag of chips and a Coke at the store at the same time? You know, I mean, it's like, how finite.
What about your mortgage? I bet this guy, one guy's like, well, that's a lot of money, but I bet this guy has bills. I'm like, yeah, everybody has bills. What are you talking about? I think he
no
said
bills,
like,
no work.
I think it's even better because I'm pretty sure he said something like, depending on where he lives. It's like, yeah, it's a lot of money.
About bills?
Depending on where he lives, he probably has bills. I really want to go back and find that comment now. Like, it was so funny.
I can clearly tell you don't live in anyone's basement, so you probably have bills, right?
Yeah. I'll say, hey, reselling. Yeah, reselling does not mean a no bill lifestyle. Let's make that perfectly clear. You still have to pay for electricity, water, you know,
healthcare,
all this stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, anybody out there thinks that. Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah. It's just a totally unfair comparison. When you work for yourself, people start nitpicking apart every financial aspect of your life. Whereas, like, if you have a corporate job, like my old job, insurance underwriter is $42,000 a year. Great. Mm-hmm. But that's before taxes. That's before the insurance. Mm-hmm. That's before all my bills. Nobody, if you have a corporate job, nobody asks you for a further breakdown. They just, oh, you make that a year. Great. Like, that's not $42,000 a year before that. It's more like 28 after everything.
That's right. That's right.
But when you work for yourself, man, people just want to find any reason at all for it not to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you're doing really good. I assume you got the YouTube thing going on. You got the eBay thing going on. Your wife's still working. You got two incomes coming in. I think you're doing just fine. So jumping right into it, we have been talking over the past couple of podcasts to a couple of resellers that did a little bit of part-time reselling and had a full-time job, but then they call what we're calling making the leap. They made the leap into full-time. Each one of them had their own different story. And that's what we wanted to talk to you about tonight. And we wanted to hear your story. Why did you make the leap? How did you come about making the decision? I'm not going to ruin your story, but I'm not even sure if it was a decision that you could make on your own. Mm-hmm. So basically, I wanted to ask you to begin with, if I were to take a look at your resume today, mm-hmm. what did you have in previous jobs? What was like your underlying theme in your previous jobs? Was it like technical, was it customer service oriented, things like that? What would it be?
So my first job ever was at a trophy shop where I would make like trophies and plaques and things like that.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because the profit margins on trophies are insane. Like, I mean, it's so cheap to make a trophy. I can make a 6 foot tall trophy for like $6, but then you'd sell it for $400. You know, and it's just one of those things that nobody ever thinks about. Nobody thinks about the profit on a trophy. So that I actually might buy that business from her one day if she ever wants to sell it. She's super old. She does it by herself. Ever since this was in high school. So anyway, that was my first job. Second job was at Piggly Wiggly as a bag boy.
I'm going to interrupt. What age did you start that job? When did you first start working?
It's like 15. I think it was 15.
Good deal. I like to hear that. Okay, sorry. Keep going.
So trophy shop, Piggly Wiggly, and everything after that was pretty much food service for a while. Mm-hmm. Just because it was easy, convenient. Once you start it, you get experience. You can kind of transfer it anywhere. Mm-hmm. I delivered Chinese food for like 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I actually... Man, there was a point where I was like, I could do this forever. Cause I remember 1 month I made like $4,000. And at the time, you know, dumb college kid, I was like, I'm not even paying taxes on this because it was all under under the table. I'm like, this is great. I'm making, you know, that's like 50 grand a year.
Yeah.
But my mom was like, what happens if the store burns down? And I'm like, they'll just rebuild it. She's like, what are you gonna do in the 6 to 12 months it takes to rebuild? I'm like, I don't know. Like, so obviously it wasn't that reliable, but did that for a while. It was pretty good money as a young, you know, college guy, not too many bills. And then I got into insurance and like financial planning type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I sold insurance for a while and I didn't really like that. It was either feast or famine.
Were you an agent or a broker or?
I was an agent. I was an agent doing like property and casualty insurance, home, auto, life. Mm-hmm. Did that for, I guess, about 2 years and just it really wasn't that. I mean, it's, you know, you sell one good policy and you make a little bit of money and then, you know, people just find every excuse to keep putting it off. So it was just feast or famine. So I took my insurance license and got a job as an insurance underwriter. Again, just using like my past experience to like save me hassle trying to start a new career. And I was like, oh, okay. So I started at my last job, an insurance underwriter. It was okay. Like it was pretty independent. Like you just went in every day and there was just it was a home. We underwrote home insurance policies. So I would just look at inspections of new business and determine if there was any issues that we would need to cancel a policy for. So did that for about a year and I was pretty content at that. I didn't really enjoy it. I was reselling and doing my YouTube channel at that time. I think I started the job in April of 2018. Mm-hmm. I started reselling on eBay Halloween of 2018. Started my YouTube channel like September of 2018. Started making reselling YouTube videos February of 2019. And then worked. So I was working from April 18th to April 2019 was a year. And then I got laid off in August. So like a year and a half there, something like that.
Right.
But yeah, I had every intention of just like working there forever. You know, there was some lady, she had worked there her whole life since she was 16 years old and she was like 65. She was like retiring that year. It's the only job she's ever had. Wow. And she seemed happy. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. But it wasn't a passionate job. I stopped thinking about it about 30 minutes before I clocked out every day, if I'm going to be honest. And, but it was just, it was a good job, you know, $42,000 a year in South Carolina. That's nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what college graduates are hoping to make, you know,
right.
Had decent benefits. You know, nobody was like breathing down your neck all day. You can kind of work at your own pace as long as the work got done. So it wasn't something I was eager to get out of, but it also wasn't something I was very passionate about.
Right. So Josh, would you say that the, what you're doing right now, reselling and making YouTube videos, is this your passion? Is this, is this where you feel like you really belong and you can put all your effort into it? And, you know, they always say, do something you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Mm-hmm. Is this where you're at now?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I was talking with, our podcast, Triple Thrift podcast that I do with my friends, Joey and Drew, you know, if one day, you know, if I keep growing, like I'm growing, you know, one day I become a millionaire, I'm not going to stop going to thrift stores. Like it's something in your bones that wants you to finding those deals. So it's really just, I guess I'm just blessed enough to say it's like a hobby that just pays really well. Like reselling, you can make as much money as you want. If you want it to be, you know, a hobby that you just like finding deals, you could easily make it a hobby that just pays for itself. You can make enough money to pay your phone bill. You can make enough money to pay your mortgage. You can make enough money to retire. It just depends on how hard you want to work.
Not for sure. We've always said you get out of it what you put into it.
Mm-hmm.
It truly is one of those type of jobs, as opposed to a 9-to-5, where no matter how much you put into it, no matter how many hours you put into it, you might not see more money out of it.
Yeah.
Right.
And I guess, and people work the corporate jobs for the stability. Which is why I was working a corporate job. I'm like, I could probably make more money as a reseller, but I've got this check. I was bringing home like $1,100 every 2 weeks, like consistently, no matter what happened. I didn't have to, coming from insurance sales, where it's like 1 month I might make $2,000. 1 month, I think my lowest month ever was like $400.
Yeah.
Like, this sucks. And it was just, I was just married at the time. So it was just embarrassing, you know, like my wife at the time was making way more money than me. and here I am,
uh-oh, like
the man of the household, you know, trying to be a provider. And I'm making $400 a month. Like, yeah, it's crazy. So
two things I hear from that story that I really like. One, you had a good work ethic. It doesn't sound like you went without a job for, I don't know, maybe any length of time at all. So you were, even though you were jumping from job to job, you were consistently working that whole time.
Yeah.
Second thing is you worked, like you said, from the age of 15. So it sounds like just being, you know, a good worker was ingrained at you at some point in time in your upbringing. And I give kudos to you on that, because I don't see that everywhere these days, and I can appreciate that. But you know, you made a comment, and I'm gonna jump to this next question. And Gary and I, we talk about, you know, we could jump to full time, but we're gonna wait until, you know, we can guarantee that we get at least as much as we're making now, or we need a backup plan, and until that's actually happening, then we'll make the jump. I'm being open and honest, giving you this opportunity to just be honest. Do you think that we're just making excuses for ourselves? What do you think?
So thinking back, I don't think I ever would have purposely quit my job to be a reseller. I just think, I don't know, like getting laid off and then trying to make it. I got laid off in August, which was a great time to get laid off, because you have like the very beginning of Q4 to like try to be a full-time reseller. So I was like, well, let's try it. If it doesn't work, I'll just find another job in January. You know, I've never been arrested or anything. I didn't get fired. I should be able to find another job somewhere.
Yeah.
At least not yet.
It's kind of like a risk-free trial of being a full-time reseller. But if I wouldn't have been laid off, I'm pretty sure I'd still be working there. Pretty miserable, you know, and my YouTube channel wouldn't be as big as it is now. I definitely wouldn't be as happy as I am now. I wouldn't be making near as much money as I'm making now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think you're incorrect. I mean, I think most people want like a safety net, but I think if you're at a full-time job now and you want to leave that eventually, as long as you're making some sort of steps to move in the right direction while you're still employed, I think that's what's important for us. What really made it easier is the fact that we had a lot of savings that we actually cash flowed everything. There was never any time where we had to go into our savings account to pay any bills. Mm-hmm. And that also had to do with the fact that we were just living very frugally. My wife is a very natural born saver. I mean, she has money from her like 16th birthday that she still hasn't spent. She's 26.
Really?
In a couple of months. She's just very, very much a saver. So her saving put us in a pretty good position financially for us to be able to, you know, kind of just try it out without much risk. So have a good amount of savings saved up to kind of buffer, because as you make the transition from part-time to full-time, you can't pull out all your profit. You have to be reinvesting in more inventory. I went from like 250 active listings up to 650. Mm-hmm. in that transition. And obviously I had some stuff in my death pile, but a lot of it was just, you know, taking some profit and reinvesting into the business, buying more stuff, buying more shelving units, buying more bins. You know, it does take some reinvestment. You also have to pay taxes. So you have to be able to look at your, you know, your monthly nut, I guess, and see, you know, what do I have to sell to hit this? You know, if you've got a truck payment and a car payment and a motorcycle payment and a house payment and kids tuition and all this stuff, like, and you're just getting stuff from thrift stores and yard sales, it's going to be pretty tough to cover that bill. But for us, I think at that time, all of our monthly expenses, including like food and gas and everything, was like $3,000. Right. And my wife was still working. My wife actually got promoted at her job like a week before I got laid off. So everything just kind of fell into place. Okay. But yeah, if you want to move from part-time to full-time, start saving money, start cutting down your budget. You want to make it as easy as possible to start that business. Mm-hmm. The thing that's going to get in the way the most if you're trying to grow a business is worrying about feeding your kids or paying your mortgage. Yeah. If you're worrying about that, you're not going to have the ability to focus on listing and sourcing new items.
So this actually is a pretty good segue into a question I had. So when it comes to actually budgeting your money out, you know, per month, you're not necessarily earning an exact figure every month. Not like you would, you know, where you're at a corporate job or something like that, you know, to the dollar, to the cent, how much you're going to get paid usually. So whenever it comes to buying new inventory, investing back in the business, like equipment, you know, like I said, shelving bins and things like that, what's your typical sort of allocations that you give to these things? Like, do you say, okay, I'm going to take 20% and use that for equipment or overhead costs, and I'm going to use, you know, 50% of my profit and put it into buying more items? And then obviously we have bills and fund money and things like that. What's sort of your process for allocating this that you found has worked for you?
So luckily, I'm a very naturally unorganized person. Organization is not my strong suit at all. I am a little bit more
trend, by the way, when it comes to resellers.
Yeah. Married like, an organized woman.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
I mean, I think it's so like Dave Ramsey has a budget for like if you're in sales, like if you have a variable income each month, mm-hmm. you basically list all of your bills in order of most important to least important. Mm-hmm. And then as you make money with whatever, like, so reselling, as you make money, you start paying the bills in order of most important. Obviously, you know, food, clothing, shelter is first. You know, your credit card companies are all at the bottom. They get paid last. Right. If you get that. Right. So you just make sure your household is covered, and then you just go down the list. And if you finish the list that month and you still keep making money, then you can have a plan what to do with that. You could, you know, save 20%, give more, mm-hmm. You know, add to retirement, whatever you want to do. Luckily for me, because I'm naturally unorganized, I don't really stick to a plan that much, but I've also been blessed enough to where my income is doing well enough where I don't really have to budget that month that much. Like, I mean, I'm pretty open about my income. I don't want to share it because I'm wanting to make a new video, but, starting from like 4 months ago until the next 12 months, I should do over six figures just with YouTube. Not counting anything from eBay. So, and our whole monthly expenses are about the same as they were when I got laid off, like $3,000 a month. So I don't remember the last time I was concerned about being able to pay the bills. Right. You know, we just take care of everything as it goes. You know, if I need, you know, a new microphone or something, it's luckily my expenses are pretty low. Like the only thing I'm on the fence about now is a drone. I really want a drone. I don't need a drone. I'm like, what would I film? It's just something I want. Right. It's like $500. And I mean, there's single days where I make that much on YouTube. So it's just, I don't know. Again, I'm very lucky. I'm very blessed to not be in that situation where that's like a true issue, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
But if you're in the situation going from part-time to full-time and you're trying to cut expenses and everything, you really need to have that plan. Mm-hmm. You know, take your profit and take out your taxes that you're going to owe. And then, you know, list all of your expenses, you know, make sure your household is taken care of before your business, honestly, mm-hmm. Before you go buy more inventory, you're going to make sure your mortgage is paid, you know? Mm-hmm. So it just depends. Look, you know, like I said, I'm just very blessed to not have to put too much thought into it. We're just saving a lot of money right now.
Right. Okay. Let me go ahead and go out on a limb, and everybody who's listening or in the chat, I want you to realize that this is our third interview on the Leap of Faith, going from part-time to full-time. This is the third time that Dave Ramsey has been mentioned.
Yep.
I think that's a very good piece of advice. I've used it. Mm-hmm. Gary's used it. All yes. three of our guests in this situation have used it. So if you're a listener or in the chat and it's something that you need to get financials under control in your own personal mm-hmm. life, I believe, and we all believe, the Financial Peace University is a good place to start.
And let me tell you, what's a crazy irony to this too, is let me tell you the one book I always see at thrift stores, the Dave Ramsey, you know, Financial Peace University, either kit series or, you know, the
three ring binders.
Yeah, that's right. I always see them at the thrift stores. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like this strange, like sort of sign that the universe is showing me, you know, that says, hey, you know, you're on the right track here. And there is something to this. But and it's funny because that's probably the most powerful thing and probably the most valuable thing that's in the thrift store, you know, and nobody's mm-hmm. picked it up for a dollar.
Nobody's picking that up to resell. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's I find that ironic. So, yeah.
So, Josh, you had mentioned in one of your other answers that you had gotten laid off from your previous job. And I was curious, though, before that took place, were you already thinking and preparing in your mind, hey, I need to think about going full time? You had previously said that you might still be doing what you were doing. But were you ever thinking, hey, I could probably do this full time before you got laid off from your job?
I mean, I guess like I would see like John and Lonnie make videos and they're just like, well, like these guys are making full-time income. All they do is make YouTube videos and resell. Like I've got 45 hours a week I'm spending here at this dumb job. Like if I had all this extra time to resell and make YouTube videos, like I feel like I could do it, you know? But again, I never planned on it. Even after I got laid off, I applied for a job that, it's so weird, man. Like The day I got laid off, a job opened up at a company my mother-in-law worked at. Mm-hmm. It was an underwriter position just with health insurance instead of home insurance. But mm-hmm. all the duties were the same. Like the job description was me to a T. I was qualified. It was about the same amount of money that I was making at my old job. And my mother-in-law knew the hiring manager. I'm like, okay. And I've never interviewed for a job that I didn't get. So I'm like,
oh, wow.
I'm really good at job interviews. I'm a pretty humble person, but when it comes to job interviews, I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So I felt pretty confident about that, but I never got a call back for that interview. I'm like, why? It's open. My mother-in-law knows you. I'm qualified. This is literally my exact job that I was just laid off from, just with a different version of insurance. Like mm-hmm. you don't get any more qualified than this. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I guess it was just meant to be, you know, if yeah. I got that job, I'd still be working there probably with mm-hmm. my mother-in-law every day. That may be a good right. thing, maybe a bad thing. I don't know, you know? So I don't, everything happens for a reason, you know?
Yeah, it seems that it does, because like you said, you never had an interview you didn't get hired for, and in this case, you never got the interview to begin with. So
yeah,
it happened for a reason. I agree with that 100%. So you were mentally prepared for this, I assume. As you could be, right?
Yeah, I felt like I could do it. I just didn't. I never actually had a plan to do it until I was laid off, and I was like, well, now's my chance.
Yeah. So how did YouTube come into the equation? Do you have a background in videography or video editing or anything like that?
I had an old YouTube channel where I just uploaded videos like singing, like doing covers of songs.
No and, way.
Yeah. Well,
I'm going to go find that.
I think it's public, but those weren't like editing.
Clicking private on video now.
Yeah. those videos weren't like edited or anything. I think the first, my church goes on a mission trip to Honduras every year.
Right.
And I went one year and I just took my GoPro and was like, oh, I'll film a little video. And I edited it and the church liked it. And then I became like the videographer for that trip for 3 or 4 years. And just kind of, I don't know. I feel like video editing is kind of like cooking, like a chef, you know, like you take all these ingredients, like all these clips and like put them together with the right cuts and the right transitions and sound effects. And like my recent video, the Halloween alien thing, I was trying to find scary music and like I had to combine two scary songs because the first song didn't have a scary part in it. And I don't know. It was just fun. Like I've always had fun editing videos and you're taking these raw clips and editing and editing them into something that people watch and enjoy. Mm-hmm. It always just blows my mind that I could have like a 40-minute video that's literally just me talking to my GoPro, walking around the thrift stores, and you know, 20,000 people watch it and enjoy it. Not even like reluctantly watch, like they purposely watch it and enjoy it. And it just blows my mind. And how it's many? Cool.
Sorry, I'm go sorry ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you. No, how many fine. Hours of footage do you get to make a 30-minute video?
It really depends on the video. So like, if I'm filming like a video inside, like a income video or something like that, I usually try to make those fairly professional. So I try to cut out any ums or whats that I have. So those usually take a while. Like I've made a video about pirate ship and that video took like 6 hours just to film and like another like 4 hours to edit. But if it's a video of just me like going around the thrift stores and like just talking, like my last video I posted, it was just three thrift stores and like me in the garage. And that was really just adding clips together, like then cutting out a little bit of fat on each side, like of me pressing record. But for the most part, I'm pretty comfortable talking on the camera. So I'll just turn the GoPro on and talk. You know, if I lose my train of thought, I'll just stop for a second and then keep going and then just cut out that pause. So most of my videos are just cuts and trims. And then occasionally I'll add some music and I try not to get too fancy. I don't do any like crazy graphics or transitions or anything like that.
Well, random question. Have you ever walked into a store or a yard sale with your GoPro and they told you to quit recording?
Never. No, really? People always ask if I like ask for permission. I've never asked for permission to film. I talked about it in my live stream today. Like I feel like if you ask for permission, people like usually the person's going to be like, I don't know, let me get my manager. And then the manager's going to be like, I don't think that's a good idea because they just don't want to get in trouble. But I've also learned that they don't really care. So like, I'm not going to give them an opportunity to tell me no. I'm just going to walk in, start filming. And then most of the time they just don't care enough to tell me no.
Yeah.
Occasionally I'll see them looking at my camera, but it's probably just out of curiosity. Not that they actually care about it.
Gary, where was that one place we went to?
I was just about to say they had opened up a Goodwill outlet here. In Columbus, Georgia. And it was their grand opening day. And we were in there as well as 200 other people were in the store. And, you know, we're just trying to make some content for Two Dudes Picking and just say, hey, you know, this is the new Goodwill outlet. We don't have one. You know, this is the first one we've ever been in. So here's kind of what the experience is like here. And I mean, we weren't even talking explicitly to the camera. It wasn't like we were interviewing each other in the middle of the aisles. I basically just have my phone out showing, okay, here's the bins. Here's some items that you can expect. You know, it's all mixed together, et cetera. And I literally had the guy come up and tap me on the shoulder, and he says, I need you to stop recording. Mm-hmm. And he was with Goodwill, and, you know, he says, I need you to stop recording. And I said, well, may I ask why? And he says, we don't allow people to videotape in the store. I was like, didn't realize this was like a military base or anything. Yeah. Or secrets that'll get out about, you know, this used clothing in this bin. But okay, fine. I mean, all right. I mean, you guys have an Instagram, you know, that you put videos and pictures and all that stuff out on. I mean,
lots of proprietary material in that store.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that. So yeah, hopefully the music doesn't get copyrighted, but
yeah.
So. I think my Goodwills around here are just, I really just don't, people just aren't very passionate about their job. So they're not going to go above and beyond to stop anybody. But also there's like one other guy that I've seen recording there. It's not a huge problem. Mm-hmm. I think if you go to Goodwill outlets in big cities like Atlanta or Columbus or something like that, they may have had that in the past, and they may have seen a video of somebody talking about it in a negative light. Like, oh, I found needles at the Goodwill bins. And obviously they don't want that on the internet.
Right. You know? Right.
So I just try to make sure that I never show anything negative in my video. That way, if they happen to find one of my videos, it wouldn't be anything bad. It's just like, hey, look, I found this really good deal at this Goodwill. You should go shop
right
here.
Right.
Besides, if they think about it, we're showing off a lot of good stuff you can get at their store.
Dude, that
sounds like free marketing to me.
It's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. The guy that owns Dream Deals, that Amazon store I've been to, he let me film. He's like, yeah, why would I not let you film? It's great marketing. I'm like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I made that first video there, and it got over 200,000 views. It hit like 205,000 today. Nice. And he's like, anytime it hits a new milestone, he'll send me a message on Facebook. He's like, dude, this is crazy. I'm like, yeah. Isn't it so crazy that people just like see YouTubers? They're like, nah, get out of here. Take that crap elsewhere. I'm like,
yeah.
You have any idea? Like, that guy definitely owes me like 10 grand in referral fees. There's people that drive from like Pennsylvania to come to that store. And I don't understand. It's not that good.
I hear you.
But it's decent.
We don't have one near us like that. I did find a pallet consignment place here in Columbus I'm going to go check out. It's probably only a mile away from the house, mm-hmm. but its hours are only during the business hours I'm open that I have to be at work.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably going to take a day off one day, maybe right before Thanksgiving, and go check it out. Have no idea what it's going to be like, but I do know it's going to be pallet. You have to buy the whole pallet.
Your wife is going to kill you.
And it's going to be at a certain price. Like, they're going to price it out, maybe a couple, 100 or 150 or 200 or something like that. Yeah. Like, nothing like your $25 Goodwill pallet, but I don't know. Maybe they got a pallet full of really great Lowe's returns or something like that. I don't know.
I've never had luck with pallets. We had a pawn shop here that started selling pallets, and she wanted like $1,000 each. And she's like, there's some good stuff in there. But they were basically ordering like bulk liquidation inventory and then making pallets of inventory. So she knew exactly what was in there.
Yeah.
And she told me that. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to buy a pallet now, because at most I'm going to make like 20% profit.
Yeah.
You're not going to put like a MacBook in the middle of this pallet. You're going to, like, one of them was just loaded with like all these drones. And I scanned them, and on Amazon, they were selling for like $30. eBay, they were going for like $18 plus shipping.
Yeah.
And there was like 100 of them. I'm like, I don't want that. Like, they were big boxes that were going to be difficult to ship. And then, of course, like the week after that, I kept seeing all these Facebook Marketplace listings for all these drones, because all these people had bought her pallets.
Yeah.
Want to deal with selling the drones online. So they were trying to flip them on eBay. But there was like five different people doing it, because she put a few drones in each pallet. I'm like, that's just...
Yeah,
I don't like that.
I could see if you were able to get the whole pallet of drones, and basically you've taken it away, or you have no competition there. But yeah, she basically created competition
for everyone that bought a pallet. Mm-hmm. And I guess I understand she was trying to like spread the love a little bit, but I would have rather bought a whole pallet of drones than 10 drones.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what I would be getting into, but I really am interested to see what I could get into, if you know what I mean. Get greasy and dirty and see what comes of it, right?
I mean, it's fun. It makes good video content. But like, Amazon returns are usually empty boxes or broken stuff. You know, other pallets, you know, if you do like Wholesale Ninja or bulk, it's going to be 20 to 30% profit margin, you know, and you got to spend $1,000 to make 250.
Yeah.
So I'd just rather go to thrift stores.
It truly does surprise me that it doesn't surprise me that Amazon has so many returns. It surprises me that they don't do anything with the returns except sell them off to stores like your Dream Deals, you know, like, I guess that's just, they could care less. but did they really make money off of it? Because they just returned every penny for that return to that customer. Yeah. But the guy's making billions. So
I was gonna
clearly say, he's got an okay business process going on with it, right?
It's a loss leader thing. I mean, it's the same, you know, Walmart. I don't know if they even still do it, but years ago, you take anything back to Walmart, you know. So if you, you know, it broke 6 months, you know, 8 months, 20 months later, you know, take it back and they'll give you a new product or your money back. And, you know, somebody's, oh, how are they making money on that? Well, the thing is they're going to keep you coming into their store and buying their items that are marked up however much. Yeah. And as long as they can get you in, chances are you're going to take that money they just gave you and go right back into Walmart and spend it, you know? Yeah. So
is it okay if we give you a gift card?
Yeah, that's fine.
I'll find something in here.
Yeah.
Funny story. Right. I bought a shower head, put it in. My wife didn't like it. Something about it didn't spray the water hard enough to get all the conditioner out of her hair. I put the old shower head back on, put the new one back in its plastic, and then put it in the Walmart bag with the receipt, and I hung it on the bedroom door so that I could grab it the next day and leave. Somehow that bag got put on the shelf in the closet. I found it 3 years later the receipt in the plastic. And I was like, wonder if they'd still take it back. Sure enough, I took it up there. They took it back, gave me a Walmart gift card, but I just threw it in on whatever it was I was buying that day. So they really will take anything back there, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Ross is the same way. But I have returned things to Ross past the 30 days limit, and they just give you a gift card there as well. So maybe they would take it back if you had the receipt to prove it anyway. Mm-hmm. So before we move on to our games, Josh, I wanted to ask you, do you have any words of advice, encouragement, maybe discouragement for those who may be on the edge of that leap that they're wanting to make into the full-time resale? Anything you want to share with them?
So encouragement, it's not that complicated. Like, you don't have to be, I'm a college dropout. I've got 96 credit hours. You don't have to be a rocket surgeon, you know, to do reselling. It's pretty straightforward business model. It takes some time and effort into doing some research to figure out what you're going to do. I mean, flipping things in general is pretty easy. If you want to get into like Amazon and all that stuff, it gets a little bit more complicated, but for the most part, you're just buying stuff at one price and selling it for a higher price and, you know, paying taxes on the profit. So it's, you know, it's like losing weight or paying off debt. You know, it's an easy system. It's just, do you have the willpower to actually do what people are telling you to do? So it's not that hard. It just takes time. It takes work. If you want to do it and you have the motivation to do it, you can do it. Discouragement, it's not as easy. I guess it's, I don't want to like contradict myself. I mean, the system is easy. Like, I'm literally just going to thrift stores, buying stuff, listing on eBay, selling it, making $4,000 to $6,000 a month in sales, something like that, over the last couple of months. But it's not that easy. Like, it takes work. You have to be willing to go to thrift stores multiple times a day, come home, clean dirty shoes in your kitchen sink, and get me in YouTube comments about it. list the stuff you buy. Everybody loves buying stuff, but you actually have to list it on eBay, take pictures and list it, and, you know, ship it. I actually didn't ship anything today. I had like four orders that were supposed to go out, but I was just like, I'll ship them tomorrow. So don't do that. Ship your stuff on time. You know, it's the process is clear. It's not complicated. You don't have to have a college degree. You don't have to have a high school diploma. It's very simple. It just takes work. It's not as easy. Don't quit your job if you've got 10 listings and you've been doing it for a month. You're going to fail. But if you're willing to put in the work and kind of grow your business a little bit at a time as you're still working, and you get to a point where a lot of people say once you get to a point where you're making the same at your job, that's when you can quit. But that's very difficult. You know,
you'd be working two jobs practically at that point in time.
Yeah. So, I mean,
there's a lot out there who do make the same or maybe even more than their full-time job doing it, quote unquote, part-time, but they put in the hours of another full-timer, right?
And it's not always a direct like one-to-one correlation. Like if you're working 10 hours a week, making $1,000 a month, and you think you can quit your job and work 40 hours a week, making $4,000 a month, it's not a direct one-to-one correlation. Mm-hmm. More time doesn't always equal more money. Right. You have to actually, right. So I would maybe scale that. Like if you're working 10 hours a week, you know, on your reselling business while working full-time, mm-hmm. maybe just try to bust it up to 20 hours a week and see how the money follows. Honestly, if you have it, I remember, I forgot who, KP Trainum. I think he had an opportunity to go like part-time at his job, mm-hmm. and resell more. And that's a great opportunity. Like if you can keep your job and just go part-time and then put that extra time towards reselling and like fill in the gap. Yeah. I think that's an awesome, awesome system.
Yeah. That's actually a really good way to put it about, it doesn't always correlate, you know, a one-to-one. I had this one lady I used to work with. She made this ridiculous statement one time because she sold like, you know, that cheap jewelry or whatever, that, you know, you get a bunch of people around and then you pass out an order form after you get them half drunk. And she said, well, you know, I make $100 an hour, selling jewelry. And I'm like, well, how many hours do you sell? And she's like, well, like one or two. And I said, okay, well, if you were to sell jewelry, then why haven't you quit your job? You'd be making, you know, if you work 40 hours a week, how much money is that you'd be making? Because it's not that one-to-one. You're not always going to get those customers. You know, you're not always going to be able to source items in the same volumes that you source them normally. I mean, how many times, Adam, have we gone to the thrift store and we walk out with nothing, you know, and of course we're, you know, doing it on our lunch break and things like that. Sometimes we'll make the odd trip to Atlanta to go do it. But I think that, you know, if you were doing it full time, you'd have to be so disciplined in order to say, okay, I'm going to this thrift store, I'm going to this thrift store, and then this one. And that's my daily routine. And then I'm shipping items and then I'm taking pictures. And, you know, this is my work. And as you said, you know, you're not making $100 an hour. You know, you may do an hour's worth of work or 2 hours worth of work per se, and you're making, you know, a couple of $100 for that day, but it's not the same as if you get paid a salary making that much money, you know, per hour guaranteed. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, people lose sight of that when they think about the idea of full time with eBay. But, you know, I think, you know, if you have a good inventory stream, if you have a good way to source and you have some dependable inventory streams, you know, obviously you can control that more. But that's a really, really good thought on that about the correlation. I never really thought about that until you said it. But having people, you know, mention that, it's like, well, look how much money I made in an hour. You know, God, if I did this, I'd be rich. Sure. Then why aren't you doing it? You know, yeah. Because you know, you can't be rich doing it, you know? So,
and I'd like to add, if I may, that, when I first got started, and I'm only doing it part-time, right? But when I first started reselling, the hardest thing as a newbie was learning what resells, learning what is good to pick up. What are you wasting money on that's not going to get you anything? Because you got to learn how to comp it out. You got to learn how to understand there's a season for certain things, right? That truly is... that took the longest as a new reseller. So if you're just getting into reselling, that's probably that was the hardest thing to do, was learning what to pick up, rather than waste my money on everything I thought that would sell. Gary, you'll remember when I first started, I was looking at all what we call the mall brands, because when I was in high school, I was cool if I was wearing Tommy Hilfiger. I was cool if I was wearing Chaps Polo, right? But those aren't the things that you're going to resell your Nautica very and well. Shirts.
Yeah,
but that's right. So I was paying attention to those things, but those aren't the things you actually want to pick up to put up on eBay, because they're long tailed and they're low margins, right? Right. So, Josh, I appreciate that. It's really good advice sharing with our listeners and all of our commenters here. And I'd like to take this opportunity to just go ahead and let's just jump into our game. Y'all ready to play a game? Commenters, y'all ready to play a game? Let's do it. All right. Everybody in the chat, get your markers out. It's time to play a game called More or Less. And this is a game where I'll throw up five items on the screen, and I've covered up the price that it's sold for. These are actual sold items on eBay. And I've covered up the price that they sold for, and I've put a price on top of it that is my fake price, if you will. Now, Josh and Gary, they've got two little signs in their hand. One says more, one says less. And the point of the game is they've got to guess which one goes with this item. Was it actually more, or did it actually sell for less? So I'm going to share my screen real quick. Let's see, application window. I always hate this part. I always feel like if you don't do it perfect, then StreamYard won't find the tab I'm looking for and pull it up. So I need to close it and open it back up again, guys. Sorry about that.
You're good.
All right. Let's try this again. All right. Application Word. There it is. All right. Share. All right, guys. Can you see this first item?
Yep.
This version of more or less is, I called it pop culture. Everything, every item that we're going to look at tonight has to do with some sort of pop culture in our past, whether it be a movie, whether it be a game, whether it be comic books or things like that. So all of these items are going to be based on pop culture. And the first item we have here is a pair of the Nike Air Mags from the Back to the Future. Y'all remember that? Back to the Future 2? Mm-hmm. The ones that lace themselves and probably are anti-gravity and all that good jazz. So this particular pair supposedly...
These shoes do none of those things, but they look like...
There you go. This particular pair was supposedly it was a set model and it was never worn. Okay, size 9, if that makes a difference in whether or not you're going to price it out. And it sold for $10,000. All right, for $10,000. I want you to reveal now, do you think it was actually more or less? What did it actually sell for? Gary says less. Josh says more. All right. So the actual sold price of this pair of tennis shoes from Back to the Future is $8,000.
Dang.
$8,000. That's a lot of money for a pair of shoes.
Can you believe that for a pair of shoes? And they probably weren't even worn on set. So, but still. If they were to automatically lace themselves, maybe I'd pay $8,000 for them, right?
Or the anti-gravity thing. That'd be kind of sick.
Yeah. That would be cool. All right. So we got one for Gary and for Josh. All right. We're keeping score. Let's move on to the next item. Here we have a vintage Apple iMac computer. It doesn't have the year here, but it does say vintage. I guess that's important. Let's see. When were these made? These were in the 80s, weren't they? Can't remember exactly.
They were a little bit later than that.
Yeah, like late 90s, I think.
Late 90s? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so this one is an all-in-one. It is blueberry colored, and it's a vintage iMac 9.2.2. Now, I don't know the versions. I'm not the one playing the game, though. I hope if y'all know the versions, it might help out with this version, with this more or less. So, sold price, $224.99. Do you think the actual sale price is more or less? Reveal. Mm. All right. Gary says more. Josh says less. Yes. That makes it for a very good, interesting game. Let's look at the commenters real quick. We got Art Bandelay. He says that it was in the 90s. Thank you. And he says that it went for more. So his vote is equal to Gary. He agrees with Gary. Then we got Salvadorable Merciado. He says less. So he's on Josh's side of the fence. So let's see what the actual sale price for this vintage computer was. $289.99. All right.
Apple fanboys love them some old Apple things.
Yes, they do.
You know.
$289.99. That means it was more. All right, Gary. You got two. Josh. It's zero. Okay. I think you're going to like this next one.
Okay.
I had you on my mind when I was coming up with this item. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Here we go. The Office, the complete series Blu-ray, new inbox. Man, I heard it from a little Tweety Bird that you kind of like the show a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a rumor and you're just playing with it or not. If
it's true or no, not. I do like it a lot. That's just such a tough price because I like.
Yeah.
It's so, I feel like it's like it could sell for like $115 or $120.
I hear you.
Blu-ray.
Okay. So the complete series, Blu-ray, box set. How many seasons were in the series, Josh? Do you know?
Nine.
Nine? All right. So that's a lot of discs in here. Mm-hmm. All right. So my suggested sold price is $118.99. Do you think it went for more or less? Reveal. All right. Both of you are a more. Good job. Y'all agree on that one. Let's see. Art, he says less. He says nine, but I'm not sure what he means by that.
Probably nine seasons.
Oh, nine seasons.
Yeah.
Nine seasons. Good deal. All right. So the actual sold price for this is $133.28.
Wow.
So you both get a point on that one. All right. 133. Would you pay $133.28 for a complete series on Blu-ray, Josh?
No. Okay.
Is it available on Netflix?
It is currently, but it's going to be taken off very soon. And they also already took off Parks and Rec, which is like my second favorite show. Mm-hmm. That's a good show. The thing is about like DVDs and Blu-ray sets is like you have to get up and put the disc in that you want to watch the episode. I would pay. Like if there was like a digital version, like a digital, you just pay one price and get all the episodes to watch whenever you want. I'd pay like $250 for that.
Mm-hmm.
I can totally get it. Feel you. Yeah. You don't have to get up and change a disc or like, oh, what's that one episode? What season is it in? What disc is that? I don't.
Okay. I got to tell a quick story. My wife wanted all 10 seasons of Friends and like all 13 seasons of ER. So I'm like, dude, I am set for the next 10 years for Mother's Day and birthday or Christmas, okay? I am set.
We can give her one season per.
That's right. But Josh, oh you God. Made the best comment. Guess who was the guy who had to always get up and change out the discs?
You.
She never did. But you know what? It's all about love, you know?
That's right.
Yeah. Unconditional love.
Unconditional.
All right. No, we got two more items. All right. The next item is a Darth Vader lightsaber, and this one is a Force FX lightsaber, new and mint in the box. All right. Now, guys, I'm going to go ahead and tell you, because I like lightsabers. I'm going to tell you, the Force FX series, those are the big ones. Those are the ones that cost some money, okay? But you got to decide, is it more or less than $285.75? I think that's a pretty decent price, personally, $285.75. But what do you think? Did it actually sell for more or did it sell for less? Go ahead and reveal. All right. Both of you say less. Y'all are on the same tune of music, the same page of music now. All right. So the actual, anybody in the chat want to poke in on that one? Go right ahead. All right, the actual sold price for this lightsaber was $229.
Okay.
All right, so you both get a point on that one. Good job, guys.
Isn't like Kylo Ren's lightsaber the Force or the FX light? Isn't that like the top dog? Like it's so hard to get. It was only offered at Disney or something like that.
The Force FX series began only at Disney, but then they started selling it to other stores to sell. Gotcha. But it's not like Target. I mean, you can't get it at Target.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
It's like it's in New York at those big toy stores. I can't even think of one right now, right? Okay, so Sal actually said less. He got it right. Good job, Art. He said less. All right, guys, good job. I didn't catch anybody on that one. All right, the last one, the last item is a set of five Napoleon Dynamite action figures. Now, these aren't signed. I actually saw a bunch of them that were signed by the actors themselves, but these aren't signed. So I'm going to say $74.99 is the price I suggest it sold for. But if you think about it, it could be too high. It could be too low. So I want to know, what do you guys think? Go ahead. Oh, did I hide it? Yep. Go ahead and reveal. Do you think the actual sold price for these five figures are more or less? All right, Gary, you got more, and Josh has less. All right. So the actual sold price for this set of five action figures from Napoleon Dynamite was $99.95.
I know what to look for in the stores now. Wow, I never would have thought that.
There you go.
Seriously, I wouldn't have thought it went for $74.
I found a sealed Boondock Saints, like the guy from Walking Dead, like his. Yeah. It was like $1.99 at Salvation Army the other day, and I looked up sold comps, and even sealed, they sell for like $12.
It's well, crazy, that's good. DVD?
Yeah. No, it, like an action figure.
Oh, the action figure. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I saw it and I was like, oh my gosh, that's probably really good. And I was like, not even like 12 free shipping. I'm like, what? That's crazy.
Yeah. And I didn't, when I saw that movie, and it was only like maybe a couple of months ago when we were here in quarantine and I was just searching through Netflix looking for stuff I hadn't seen before, I didn't even realize that old Daryl was in that movie, you know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. How many of that? They made like two or three of that movie. I didn't see that going past one, but they did it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to share this last one with you guys. This is a free for all. Actually, first off, let's go ahead and say, let's see. I got Gary. Holy mackerel, man. I got you 5 for 5 on that.
Yeah. And, you know, for anyone out there listening, I do not get these ahead of time. I have no idea what he's going to put up here.
It's tough, though, isn't it, Josh?
It's very tough. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Josh, I got lucky on a couple of those.
Yeah, Gary, you just got lucky. I didn't show you any of these things. And I tried to pick stuff that I knew you wouldn't know anything about, too. Got to give the guest an edge, you know, man.
Napoleon Dynamite. I don't know anything about Napoleon Dynamite. I'm going to be honest. I haven't even seen Napoleon Dynamite. I've seen clips of it, but the clips I've seen, like, I don't know.
I never finished it. I couldn't finish it myself.
Those types of movies, like if it's a Will Ferrell movie, I can laugh the rest of the way, but you know, I don't know.
All right. I want to show you this one last one because I came across it as I was looking for those other five items, but I chose not to put it in here because it's so, I'm going to tell you, it's just outrageous. All right. So look at this. A Funko Pop discontinued from FYE, the CD store. I don't even know if they're still open. It's Pennywise the Clown. Okay. $15,000. This is just a freebie. Do you guys think it went for more or less than $15,000? Chat, what do you think? Funko Pop Pennywise the Clown. Do you think it went for more or less? Okay, go ahead and reveal. Gary, you say more. Josh, you say less.
Should have had a little red balloon lift this up. That would have been great. But
that would have been awesome. Nobody in the chat. Let's see. Okay, let's see. Sal says more. Dan says more. All right.
I will say, if that's a $15,000 Funko Pop, they should have taken a much, much better photo.
Oh, I agree absolutely.
With that. Yeah, was that a wire shelf in there? What's that?
Oh, that's sitting in their closet
forever.
Right.
All right, guys. You ready to be blown away? $20,000.
$20,000. Like, for something that's so relatively new, they can get, I mean, insanely expensive. Like, Adam, you actually found one in thrift. Where was it? Was it in Goodwill? Which store was it in? Yeah, and you probably paid what, a couple of bucks for it? And you said you priced it out, and it was like
$6.
Yeah, it's worth like $50 or something like that, $50, $60. Yeah.
It was something so new. I've never heard of this character either.
Uh huh.
It's Sora, Sora. I don't know who that is. I bought it for $6. It's selling on eBay right now for, depending on, you know, bids and stuff like that, from $40 to $55.
Yeah.
A Funko Pop. This is going to sit on your shelf, you know, decoration. Anyway.
Yeah.
Then I would say that Funko Pop and the people who made that game, Skylanders, they came up with an idea because every Every single console has their own game, and every single Skylander game has their new characters, and you got to start from scratch every time you play that game. So they had a home run when they created that game. All right, everybody in the chat room, we got some bolos for you. We're going to play, we got a new section, not a new section, but we got a section for you called Hot or Not.
Hot or Not.
All right, this will probably be our last section for the night. We're going to wrap it up right here. And this is the time when we all come up with an item that is hot, something, a bolo, something you should look out for in the store. It may be something that's temporary just during the season, or it may be something you should always keep your eye open for, or not, something that you should, maybe you tried it and one of us tried to sell it and it just was a flop, or it used to be good, but now it's just completely fallen off the radar. You know what I mean? So those are the two items or two types of items we're going to talk about in this section. Gary, you're first. Take it away, sir. What is your hot?
My hot brand that I'm going to say this time is going to be a brand called Kuhl, and it's spelled K-U-H-L, right? Kuhl. And the little symbol actually looks like some mountains, right? It's a clothing brand. It's more of an outdoors clothing brand. I think they sort of try to incorporate kind of the outdoors with what I call frat boy chic. You know, it's sort of fashionable, you know, at the same time as being sort of functional for outdoor clothing. Pants, shirts, different things like that. The pants, I think, should be of the most interest to you. In the stores, they usually sell for anywhere between about $75, $80 in store. And this is a brand that tends to hold its value really well. If you get a pair of those pants, you're probably guaranteed to make at least about $40 to $50 on each pair, depending on condition, of course, and size. But that's something I've always had good success with. So again, the brand's name is Kuhl. It's spelled K-U-H-L. Be on the lookout.
That is a good one. I had forgotten about. Found a few of those myself here recently. Josh, you got an idea of a hot that you want to share with the crowd?
Yeah. So the hot item would be Whisk laundry detergent. If you just type Whisk laundry detergent on eBay, you're going to see sold comps that are pretty crazy. There's different types that are all discontinued. I think all Whisk is discontinued. So it's something really easy if you're ever at like a hardware store or like a mom and pop shop that you just have time to stop in. You can just go to the laundry aisle and just look for Whisk. If they have it, it's probably going to be covered in dust because it's I haven't made new Whisk products in a while. But I'm looking at some now. It's sold a 64 Whisk Deep Clean 64 load, sold for $100, free shipping. Some powder Whisk laundry detergent sold for $50 plus shipping. So I actually found two bottles of this at a gas station near my house. I'd stopped to use the ATM, and while I was using the ATM, I happened to look down. They had like an old ice cream machine that wasn't even working. It was just sitting next to the ATM machine, and the two Whisk laundry detergents were behind the laundry, the ice cream machine. So I think they were like $3.99 each, and I sold both of them to one buyer for like, I think like $75 or so.
That is amazing. That is an awesome hot. Awesome.
Yeah, I never would have thought of laundry detergent as being anything that you could sell more for a couple of bucks above retail, you know, but
yeah, people just, the guy that bought it from me, he was like, he sent me a message after he got it. I was like, oh gosh, what is it? A return or something? He's like, hey, thank you so much. It's perfect. My dad, I guess his dad was older. He's like, my dad's kind of getting up there in age, and he's just has to have his Whisk laundry detergent. So hopefully this will last him the rest of his life. I'm like, wow. Oh, your dad lives longer than two bottles of laundry detergent. Right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
64 loads of laundry, 128 loads is like, hey, the washing machine.
Laundry once a week.
Yeah.
Four loads on a weekend.
When he gets down to the last bottle, he's like, all right, am I going to have to spend another $100 on laundry detergent?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, hope it's God, not like a...
happy birthday.
That's a good one, though. Good one. And if I'm not mistaken, because my memory doesn't always serve me best, that's W-I-S-K, correct?
Yeah, W-I-S-K.
No H there anywhere. Okay. Nope. I'm writing that down. I'm going to put that in the show notes. Excellent. Yeah, great one. My hot item that I recently came across, unexpectedly, are WWE wrestling figurines, action figures. I've learned, from this guy off of Instagram, Thriftzilla, that there are several different type, and I'm going to specifically call out the elite type. So WWE wrestling action figures, elite. And the way you can differentiate them from the others is they have a bendable waist. They bend forward and backwards on the waist. As opposed to the others, they don't bend at the waist. They just rotate on the waist. But I recently came across 50 of them, paid Valley Rescue Mission $15 for 50 of them. And they weren't all elite, but it's important that elite is more expensive than the others. I've sold them all already. I put them in two different bundles. I sold them all within like 24 hours of the listing, and I made $140. So WWE Elite Wrestling action figures. Keep a lookout for those. All right, Gary, if you got a not item, people should know what to stay away from too, you know?
Yeah, I do. And this one, I don't have a ton of expertise, right? But I rely on my wife sometimes to tell me, you know, things to look out for. We're in the thrift store together. She'll give me, you know, hints and things like that. Because this next brand that I'll tell you about, women will line up outside of a store to go buy this new. To buy it online seems like a completely different story. And that's Vera Bradley. You know, I have never had success selling anything Vera Bradley online, with the exception of they made a visor one time that was like pink elephants. I think it was for breast cancer. And those actually sold really well. I think I sold those for like $50, you know, per. I think I found two or three of them one time. But outside of that, the purses, the little pouches, the duffel bags, things like that, I can't get them to move for nothing. Not, and on top of that too, you go to local Goodwills around here, all they see is Vera Bradley, and they want a mint for it. So there's not really any meat left on the bone for you after. If you're going to buy this brand, find it at a yard sale, find it at, you know, a flea market where somebody's just getting rid of it. Just make sure it's authentic, and go for that. But as far as looking for it in thrift stores, personally, I've never had any success. There may be some folks in the comments that may have had a different experience. Josh, you may have had a different experience with it, but as far as I go, I haven't. So
I'd have to agree with you there. I used to think it was good because my sister and my daughter had a few that they just were going to throw away. And I thought, sounds like a good brand name. I know what they spent it on. Right.
Right. Right.
I couldn't even move it for like 10, 12, 13, 14, $15. That's it.
It's insane, isn't it? Yeah. The lineup outside the store. I mean, there's a Vera Bradley outlet, that's, down in Destin, Florida, that you can go to. And I mean, the line is outside the store, you know, and you know, I it's always packed, and they're buying $100, you know, handbags and purses and the satchel to match and all these other things. And maybe that's it. It has to be matching. You know, maybe that's why, but I don't know. Anyway. All right, Josh.
I think my not item is going to be adult diapers. It's something that is incredibly plentiful, like at thrift stores. Like every time I go to Goodwill, there's always like a ton of them there. And I just see a lot of new resellers like posting on Instagram, like, oh, I found all these. They're going to sell for, you know, $25 free shipping per pack. I'm like, okay, so you spent $5 per pack, but those are really big. They're like, they're big and heavy. So, you know, shipping is going to eat it up. And I don't know. I guess you could maybe make money on it, but I've heard
$3, $4, $5 per pack, maybe.
Yeah, and it's I don't know. I'm just not going to mess with that and stuff like that. I feel like you should just leave it. I don't even like Goodwill selling it. Like, if you're going to donate it, just donate it to like a nursing home or something. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I feel the same way about stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a good one too. I had thought about it because I had seen others on other channels say, you know, they pick it up and they'll sell it and it goes for this, or you lot them up two or three or four and. I just never picked them up.
Like, if you look up Soul Comps on eBay, there's lots of like, you know, five packs that sell for, you know, $70. But I'm like, depending on where that went, like if I'm selling five packs of adult diapers to California, I mean, it's going to cost me $70.
That's right. That's right.
They're just so big.
Mm-hmm.
Well, gentlemen, I'm going to disappoint you a little bit and I'm going to cheat and I'm going to have another hot item because I couldn't think of a knot, to be honest with you. Mm. So I happened to come across two women's jackets in the store the other day, and they were a brand called PXG. And for some reason, the logo just jumped out at me, and you can see the logo here. Let's see, where are we? trying to find my shared tab. You can see the logo on this hat right here. It actually stands for Parsons Extreme Golf. And Bob Parsons is the guy who created GoDaddy.com. Hmm. And in 2013, he said, I can make the best golf equipment you've ever seen. And it's just like, he's never made golf equipment. He likes to play golf. So he just used his GoDaddy money to start making golf equipment and clothing and accessories and stuff like that. This stuff is hot. So I found two women's jackets. And I don't have my particular sold items here, but they were the only two women's jackets you could even find on eBay at that time. And it was just last week. I picked up one for $8. It sold for $75. The other one I picked up for $6 and it sold for $60 today. Mm-hmm. So PXG Golf, hot item. Stay on the lookout. It's the first time I ever saw it. I may never see it again. But if you do see it, definitely look into it. Supposedly, there are some fakes out there, but I looked on their website, and there's absolutely no way visually on the article of clothing to determine if it's real or fake, because they didn't sew anything into the seam, or they didn't make a stamp on the pocket. You know, there's just... Visually, you can't tell a real one from a fake one. So, I don't know. Take it for what it is. I sold them. They sold great. I think it's a hot item. Just thought I'd cheat and share that with everybody.
Yeah, the golf clubs are really good. Everybody has their... I play golf, and everybody has their brand of clubs that they like. But PXG are very, very expensive irons. I mean, even single... Like usually if you've got a single like Titleist iron or something, you might get, you know, 40, 50, maybe $60 for it. But there's a sold comp for a 7-iron that's just the club head, not even a shaft. And it sold for like $120.
Yeah. Here's this set right here. Generation 2, 3-iron through, what is a G wedge? I don't know what that's for.
Gap wedge.
Yeah. Thank you. Gap wedge for $2,300 for the set. So yeah. They are definitely up there. Yep. So keep on the lookout for PXG. I definitely haven't seen one of their clubs before.
I drink way too much beer during a golf round to where my clubs are even in play anymore. I mean, you know, honestly, if I want to improve my golf game, I should probably not run by the store first. That's probably, I could probably take 10 strokes off. Adam knows this, you know.
Absolutely.
Adam's like, yeah, the deeper we get into the tournament, it's like, yeah, the drunker Gary gets. And start seeing three balls, hit the one in the middle. So,
but I think we need to have a round tournament competition, a challenge, if you will. Gary and Adam versus Josh and Casey. I think we can make that happen sometime in the future.
Talking about actual golf.
Yeah, actual golf. We'll drive up to South Carolina and we'll play golf with them.
I'll be down. Yeah, that'd be great.
What do you call it whenever you play best ball? Some sort of scramble or something like that? We'll have to make it a scramble. It'll make it more fun.
Yeah, they're all day. Yeah. So
you guys make me want to play golf now. I haven't played in a while.
Excellent. That'll be even better for our team. Don't go practice. I think the last time I played was in July. Gary, what? How long has it been for you?
A year at least. Pre-COVID.
Okay, so we do play on the but we do play on the golf league.
We play on the golf league.
That part out. They totally canceled everything because of COVID this year. So haven't played golf very much lately. Well, Josh, I really appreciate you joining us tonight. We had an excellent conversation getting to know you better, getting to know how you came to become a full-time reseller in your past. And I just, you know, bottom line, I sincerely appreciate you putting your time out there and joining us for this conversation. Thanks so much. Anything you want our followers and your followers who are watching us now to know, anything you want to leave them with?
I don't think so. Just, don't get discouraged. Just keep going. Keep trying to learn and grow and be a better business owner every single day.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. If you, don't happen to already be a subscriber to either one of our channels, please do click that subscribe button. I've put Josh's Harry Tornado YouTube link in the description below. If you're watching this after it aired live, you can click on that link in the description and go check him out as well. And also, we are on multiple different platforms with our audio only version, iTunes, Google Play Music, Spotify, Anchor FM. Thanks to Anchor FM, it distributes it for us. So you can look up Two Dudes Picking on any of those podcast platforms as well. Yep. I hope y'all have a great evening. Y'all stay safe out there and have fun picking.